Thank you for joining us on Rochester Speaks. I'm Kevin Gillen, and for over 60 years, the Open Door Mission has served those in crisis here in the Rochester area. The mission provides for the spiritual and physical needs of the impoverished and homeless men, women, and children of Rochester by restoring hope and changing lives. And we are joined once again by Executive Director of Open Door Mission, Anna Valeria Eisman. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Checking my records, we spoke last June, right?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
We were 3 months or so into the beginning of the pandemic, and we're going to talk a little bit about how that has altered what you guys do. But let's get a baseline here. First of all, how long have you been executive director?
I have been executive director for about 3.5 years now.
And I imagine it's been a job for 3.5 years that's always kind of full of challenges, right? So that you're kind of used to.
Yes.
And the Open Door Mission locally, can you give us a little bit of the history?
Sure. Yeah, we've been around since 1952. Started as, I believe, the first event that ever made the mission. The mission was serving Thanksgiving dinner on Thanksgiving in 1952, and we've been serving meals for the community every single day since then. And we offer an emergency shelter for men and women. We also offer a residential addiction recovery program for men, emergency food and clothing, and a transitional housing program for women and children, as well as a permanent supportive housing program for chronically homeless families. We also do other kind of community-based services as well.
Yeah. Now, did you even still do Thanksgiving dinner in 2020?
We did. It looked a little different. We did a grab-and-go style Thanksgiving meals. We had our guests who actually were staying the overnight at our shelter were able to sit and eat together. But for the community that came in for a meal, it was a grab and go.
And how many on staff at Open Door Mission?
Right now, we're right around 50. And that includes full-time and part-time folks, because all of our programs operate with 24/7 awake overnight staff. It requires a lot of hands.
Yeah. And how are you guys generally funded?
We are very primarily funded just through private donations. So that's individuals, churches, businesses. We're about 99% privately funded. We do have a contract with the county that provides a warming center between the months of November and March. And our permanent supportive housing program for chronically homeless families is a partnership with HUD. But all of our programs, our transitional program, our emergency shelter, our addiction recovery program, they're all privately funded.
But funding for transitional housing programs has declined a bit over the years. Is that right?
It has. It's almost non-existent, actually. It's more critical than ever, especially because that the transitional housing model is really and truly what works best for families who may be not necessarily ready for completely independent housing if they've been facing some real trauma and crisis. And so we really know that transitional phase where they're provided with some on-site services while being able to remain intact and not necessarily be, you know, it's a step up from emergency housing, but it's not quite independent housing. So we know that there's just more of a need for that than ever. So we're walking in faith that we'll be able to continue to sustain that program.
Yeah, and I know it's tough to put a finger on an exact number, but approximately how many people are homeless every night here in the Rochester area?
In the Rochester area, it's usually between 600 and 750 or so.
Wow.
Yes. And that includes individuals who are currently staying in shelters. So that includes, you know, full shelter beds, as well as street homeless and folks in any of the existing transitional housing as well.
Now, that's a fairly big number. I think for most people, they wouldn't assume that there were that many homeless here in Rochester.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, yes, that's absolutely true. And I think because one thing that Rochester has done, partly because it's necessary because of the climate we live in, but it's because we don't have a lot of visible homelessness in Rochester. So aside from the, you know, folks, you know, maybe walking around downtown or, you know, we've had some of the encampments, I think Rochester has really done a pretty good job at least providing access to, like, emergency beds in the event someone chooses to accept one. So we have some folks, you know, we go out and do street outreach for folks who will gladly take a cup of coffee and a conversation, but say no thanks to the shelter bed, you know. So there are certainly folks like that who exist, but we also always know that, you know, and I think one thing that our community does really well is provide access. So if someone is on the street who maybe is not quite ready to go into a shelter bed, they know where they can go when they're ready.
And it's not just men.
Oh, no. Our, the numbers of women have continued to grow.
And kids, too?
And kids, you know, it's interesting that during the pandemic, across the board, we've seen in our shelters a lower number of families requesting emergency shelter. And I, you know, we're kind of walking very cautiously with that because, well, actually, I'll start with the hope would be that, oh, well, maybe everybody's kind of doing okay. Maybe some of the, you know, increase in unemployment benefits, stimulus, you know, some of the benefits that have been rolled out in the past year maybe have helped some situations. But I think the reality, and there's probably some sort of balance between the two, is that there are also families who are hesitant to maybe enter into the shelter system. So because of the pandemic and maybe, you know, fear of exposure, living in a congregate setting. So they could be staying in situations where abuse is a factor, where, you know, drug use, or maybe staying in overcrowded situations that maybe, because we know that the primary reason for any homelessness is eviction by primary tenant. So this is families and household units breaking apart. Yeah. And so our concern is that maybe the lower numbers are a result of people staying in situations that they would not want to stay in if they had an option.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the main Open Door Mission locations and what's done there. So first of all, Samaritan House Rescue Center and Shelter?
Yep. So that's where we provide our emergency beds for men and women. And I can add some COVID updates there. We had zero cases in the shelter until November.
Wow.
Yeah. So just kudos to our staff for implementing processes and safety protocols, and also to the county, the health department, the DHS office, who really provided just tremendous guidance and support for us. Even when we started getting some cases on site, the health department actually trained our staff to provide rapid tests. So our staff can test someone on the spot, and we provide weekly testing for all of our residents, all of our staff. And so although we saw a little bit of an uptick in positive COVID cases, it peaked after maybe about 4 to 6 weeks, and then it just dropped. And we have not had a positive case in about 3 weeks now.
Wow. So going into November, was there a feeling that you guys were kind of lucky?
Well, protected maybe.
Yeah.
Lucky, yes. And then, of course, you know, but we're also against some of these other things. You know, I think all of us are in the same boat, right, where we're like, we don't want to ever get too comfortable, you know, because we knew that we had a good run, but then the cold weather was coming. Our numbers were going to start increasing again. There was the fear of the resurgence, which, of course, happened. And so, but, you know, again, considering how high the numbers became around us, even in Monroe County, the fact that our numbers still stayed relatively small is just an absolute blessing. So.
Now, the location at 156 North Plymouth Avenue, when I come into work every day, it always seems like there's stuff going on out front and trucks and people out there. So what happens there?
Yeah, it's a busy place for not such a huge building. That's where we our administrative office is there. Our volunteer coordination happens out of there. All of the food prep for all of our buildings happens in that building. And our men's addiction recovery program is also housed there as well. So it's a very busy building. I think you and I have talked about this before, but I think one thing I love to be able to make people aware of is with the abundance of food donations that we receive there, we are actually able to partner with about 16 other agencies in the community. So this, and these aren't big agencies. We're talking about smaller neighborhood food pantries, churches, Veterans Administration, some refugee organizations that really are in need of food and may not necessarily have a connection to a bigger, you know, kind of donor or community, a place that people are aware of that know to donate. So we are able to provide through redistribution food donations that come to us, we're actually able to provide to other organizations, and 16 of them. So that's partly why it's so busy there.
Yeah. Now, you take other donations besides food, like clothes and furniture and the like?
Food and clothing and, yeah, furniture is a little tricky. We actually have come up with a creative solution to furniture, and we're hoping actually this year we may be able to have some more opportunities there. But we actually, with furniture, do a matching program. So let's say someone has a living room set that they are willing to donate and they contact us. The first question we ask them is, how long are you able to hold on to it for?
Okay.
Because what will happen is because we don't have the storage space to house furniture, we'll try to match the donor with one of our clients who actually is in need of the furniture. We do the transportation, so we would go and pick it up and bring it directly to the house. There's no interaction necessarily between the donor and the recipient. We're just kind of the middleman, but we try to match those kinds of donations when we get them because we can't store them.
And a location that's still fairly new is the Coldwater House.
Yep. We've been operating out of the Coldwater House for 2.5 years now. So even in the pandemic, it's been a challenge for all of us out there with kids and trying to navigate a very new and unusual way of learning. Our staff have been able to maintain some support from tutors that have come in, even though we have kind of restricted volunteer involvement right now. But our families are staying in the program, and when they're moving into independent housing. We've housed in the past 2.5 years, we've served 93 people, 39 families.
Wow.
And through that, all of the families that have gone on to permanent housing have all remained in the housing they moved into. So, and that actually is something that we're very, very proud of. That's a goal, is to make sure that, you know, when folks are moving on, they're not necessarily continuing to be transient, that they're actually moving and staying somewhere for a while.
Yeah. And did I see something in the news about a Main Street location that you guys are just getting going?
Yeah. You know, we were bored and we thought, you know, we should probably think of something to do. The Miller Building, for those who kind of know the Rochester area for a long time, the Miller Building is what it was originally called. It was originally the Miller Pharmacy.
Okay.
And then later on, I believe like in the 80s, it was the Archie's Department Store. And it's been owned by the Mission, I believe, since the 90s. And it's only been used as storage. So we decided a couple years ago, we really were like, okay, what are we going to do with this? And we thought about selling it. And we knew, and then that really happened, coincided with some other things going on in the community, like the closing of the Civic Center garage and the Spectrum property kind of closing off access. And it's kind of boiled to the surface that need, that really critical need for affordable housing, especially for homeless individuals. So we decided 2 years ago that we were going to try to develop it. And so we just received word from the New York State HHAP board that we were approved for funding to be able to renovate the building into 24 affordable housing units. These are all units dedicated to single adults who are homeless, and with dedicated space for victims of domestic violence, for youth aging out of foster care, for chronically homeless and individuals overcoming substance abuse.
Hmm. Now, can you explain Code Blue? Do you officially have Code Blue? Is that still a term?
It is a term, except that instead of kind of calling Code Blue based on temperatures and storms and things like that, we are just in a continuous state of Code Blue from November to March.
Okay.
Yeah, so that allows us to be able to remain, you know, constantly staffed so that in the event someone decides to come in, or our numbers have to rise really quickly, you know, really fast and all of a sudden or unexpectedly, we're prepared for that. So we're in Code Blue from November through March.
Hmm. And give me a recent Open Door Mission success story, Anna. You got one?
Let's see. Yeah, sure. We have a individual who went through our men's addiction recovery program. He graduated about 1.5 years ago. And I was just talking with him a couple weeks ago, actually. He's been working full time. And he has been living in his own apartment on his own since he graduated from the program. And he just informed me a couple weeks ago that he was just approved for a mortgage on a home.
Wow.
And so he's purchasing his own home right in the city of Rochester. And, you know, that is exactly the kind of thing that we love to see happen. And he will be continuing to offer actually support for the guys in the program now and moving forward, kind of as a source of inspiration for them.
Wow. And I know even though it's your job, it's got to make you feel pretty good when something like that happens.
It does. It makes a lot of the stress and the challenges and the uncertainties really kind of, you know, they become a little bit easier when you hear stories like that.
Yeah. And I see that your 21st annual golf classic is going to have a bit of an interesting twist this year.
Yeah, and we did it last year. It actually was much more successful than we expected it to be. And instead of being everybody's kind of golfing at once and the dinner and everything at the same time, it's just going to be more sporadic and as needed. And it'll get us a chance to go out and hopefully be able to interact with more of the players and more of the participants. So we're hoping that it'll be another fun event this year.
And people can always donate cash to Open Door Mission?
Always. OpenDoorMission.com.
OpenDoorMission.com is a great place to get information about the golf tournament. And you mentioned maybe a place to check if people have stuff to donate before just pulling up on North Plymouth Avenue.
Yeah, if anyone can pull up and donate, we're used to that. But certainly bigger items that require a little bit more planning, it's always good to give us a heads up.
OpenDoorMission.com is the website. And thanks once again to Executive Director of Open Door Mission, Anna Valeria Eisman. Don't get bored too much, okay?
I'll try. Thanks so much, Kevin.